I like your intro.
Isn't it amazing? Welcome back to another episode of Winjet Studios. Today, we are here, the fitness coaches. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Yeah. What's up?
What part of the world are you in, by the way?
I'm in LA, 6 a.m.
Behave yourself.
No, it's real, unfortunately.
What time did you wake up?
What time? I usually get up at like 2, but I actually slept late today. The only day I had an actual interview early in the morning, so I haven't been up very long.
Oh, wow. So we're honored to have you on here at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon at lunchtime in the UK.
I got a industrial-sized coffee cup, though.
I feel like I'm talking to another version of David Goggins today. Good morning.
Oh, Goggins, he don't look like he's having that much fun, though. But I guess it's fun for him, though. You know, I'm more in between, you know.
Oh, bless you.
I'm more in between Goggins and like a happy pirate, you know.
David, Goggins is very, very serious when it comes to everything. He's mastered neuroplasticity to a T. So, boy. But we can become the versions of David Goggins.
Right. Man, but I ran the marathon. I thought that was tough, man. He does that like on the regular day. Like, that dude is tough, man.
I'm telling you.
He's running fast. He's not just running that stuff. He's a pretty, you know.
Yeah.
Good minutes per mile. Like, he's really doing it, you know.
Well, I saw you the other day on one of your stories, and I loved your vision and your ethic and your way of doing things. Like, you said something that was, I laughed at it. While the world is sleeping, we're out here, you know, making things happen, right? And this is the beauty of early risers and athletes, I guess, and people who take their health and their mindsets seriously. And I say mindset because some people drop in and out, and we're here in the long run. And this is why I'm so excited to talk to you today, actually, in so many different levels. Last week, I did a talk on here on the live, and I discussed how the fitness industry has set all of us up to fail. And you've been in the industry for a very, very long time. What are the trends that you've seen in your experience so far?
I don't know if the fitness industry, I don't know if they set you up to fail, but they definitely don't help you to win. I'll put it that way. Yeah. I'll give you an example. When I first started training people outside of the military, that was maybe 1993. I'm 51, right? So at that time, when you had a client in the gym and the client wasn't getting in shape after a couple of months, the manager would pull you to the side and be like, listen, you can't be working in my gym and having people not getting in shape. Mm. So it was from the ownership on down where it was always instilled to me, yo, I have to get my client in shape. They have to see something happening within 2 to 3 weeks. Mm. You know, and now it's more based on the repeat customer. As long as you're paying your monthly, they don't really care whether you come, whether you get in shape, whether you implement the programs or not. It's on you. So they don't help you. You know, they're not helping you get in bad shape. We just kind of stay neutral. They're like, here, we got it. But, you know, if you use it, if you don't, you don't. If you don't know how to use the machines, you don't. If you don't know how to properly exercise, then, you know, you don't. So, you know, I think it's more like that. Yeah. And then the trainers as well.
Yeah.
You know, the trainers are actually part of the problem as well, because, you know, I'm very much against client retention. You know, client retention is the worst thing for the trainers. Mm-hmm. And it's the worst thing for the clients. It's the worst thing for the trainers on the business model, because it's much harder to raise your fee on a client you've been training for 2 or 3 years than to have a whole new client with a whole new price they've never seen before.
Yeah.
So it stagnates your fee. And on top of that, it holds your connections back. So you're not meeting new people because you have the same client for 2 or 3 years. It's much more of a beneficial model to transform your client and to move on. And that's how I actually built my career, because I always had lots of new clients coming in. And then I was able to learn because I was constantly transforming different body types. So within 30 years.
Yeah. This is so interesting. Look, I'm probably an amateur compared to you in the industry. And you just hit so many things. Today, I looked at some of my memories on my social media. And it's 10 years since I've been in the fitness industry. And I started in fitness first. And I'll never, ever, ever, ever work from a gym ever again, because it destroyed any idea of human interaction or how to connect with a human being that has real issues. And where you just said, where the managers told you or they pull you aside, one of the things I remember the managers used to teach me was make them feel the burn, make them feel the pain, because that's when they come back. And that's totally untrue. The average person who's not experienced hardcore training or a sport, they don't like being in pain. And when I learned like to how to train people, it's not really the physical body you're training. It's an emotional state that somebody comes and hires you as a coach and how to work with them. And you said something beautiful again is, I don't want to see them again. I don't like seeing my clients again. I like to train them. It's like going to school. You don't have the same teacher. You go to your high school, you don't have the same teacher. Then you go to university, you don't have the same teacher. And you got to help people graduate. And I think we have this horrible idea that you got to have people see you as a crutch. And that's the worst way to train people, in my opinion.
Not a person when is dependent on you for their physical well-being. And your body is too much of an intimate thing for you to be dependent on anyone for that. You know, is to empower you so you can continue the fitness journey. You know what I mean? So it's definitely a problem. And even on a psychological level, if you're trying to retain your client, and that's your goal, subconsciously, you're not going to give them 100% every session because you're trying to retain them.
Yeah.
As opposed to you trying to transform them in a set period of time, you're going to be giving them all the information because you put a time limit on yourself. So even on a subconscious level, your training is more effective when you when you have deadlines and timelines. It's intensity. It's better psychologically. A person will much rather pay $30,000 for a 30-day intensive than 2 or 3 years and not getting any results. But trainers don't understand. They have to understand the business of it.
Yeah. I think the model of, I mean, you said like personal trainers are the problem, right?
A big part of it.
Yeah. I was one of those.
I want to harp on what you said about the clubs.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I went from 1993 until I think I left my last club in 2000.
Wow.
And when Mary J. Blige, so I put a lot of time into working into the gyms. And one good thing about working in the gyms is if you don't know, like a lot of trainers don't come from an athletic background. They just take a test and they become a trainer. If you don't have any actual training experience yourself and don't know the body or maybe don't know anatomy or physiology, the clubs are a great opportunity for a novice because you have a constant influx of people coming in. And what I used to do, and that's how I became a celebrity trainer, was I would see people and I would offer to train them for free while I was working on the floor.
Yeah.
I said, hey, I just want a free lunch outside the gym. And I would ask them how to structure a company. They'd give me the information, tell me how to structure a company. And then I was able to start my own business in 2000. So the clubs become a good resource for influx of people networking and just good information, because it's constantly a different influx of people coming in there. So take advantage of the club, guys. If you're a novice trainer or you're not able to market to get enough clients, the clubs are a great place to learn. I think that was a good training ground for me, because I could also, in the club, see how other people train, watch other trainers as I'm working on the floor when I didn't have personal training time. So I could understand, okay, does that make sense? No. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then you can actually refine your skill level just by observing other trainers with their clients, how they deal with their clients, the way they stand in front of their clients when they're training them. You know, all of that stuff, you can just watch happening and really hone your craft working in the clubs.
See, when I worked in the fitness clubs, I was so intimidated. I was so not myself. And I don't know how it was like back in the 1990s. We didn't have this massive need for personal trainers. It wasn't a thing until you saw a few celebrities working with fitness coaches. Then it became like a thing for personal trainers to be out there. And it grew after the recession, I guess. A lot of fitness, 2008 recession, actually, there was a huge increase of people taking the personal training courses. I was one of them. And when I was on that gym floor, I absolutely hated it, because we had like 20 trainers in a club. And then those 20 trainers were just attacking people, and nobody liked being approached by a fitness coach. And now when I look at my old self, 10 years ago and who I am now. My personality is so much more intimate with these clients. I'm so much more with them on their journey. I feel like it's so much more personal. So I think like last week, I got it wrong. I put a statistic out there that the fitness industry is worth 32.5 billion pounds. Actually,
it's trillion. Isn't it trillion?
It's more. It's like...
It's 48 trillion, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I just had a look.
What did you come up with? Because I get different statistics when I Google at different times. You know, what'd you come up with?
Right. I'm looking at it now. The global gym industry is worth 96.7 billion in 2020. In 20, okay? And this is when at the height of a pandemic, and it still made money, right?
Right, right.
Of course it did. And one of the things that I spoke about with a lot of, without ranting or being angry, is we see this industry flourishing, but at what cost? And it's coming from our insecurities. And I say our because I was one of these statistics that went through an eating disorder, a mental breakdown, not loving myself, looking at my body and thinking I needed to be more athletic or more skinny. It traps you. And I think a lot of the times people forget how to follow their intuition of what their body needs and requires. And one of the reasons why we hire trainers is to guide them and keep them accountable without them falling into a trap. And now we have a new year coming up again. People need to take some sort of responsibility and ownership to say, this is my body. I'm not feeling good today. What am I going to do? And hiring a personal trainer, a lot of people in different cultures, I feel like I'm from a South Asian Bangladeshi background. We don't take our health and seriously at all. It's not a priority. I see females that I'd rather pay £7,000 on a Chanel handbag. And they could be at the point of having a heart attack or at the obese level or not really looking and feeling good. And it's the balance of, where does it stop? Where do we actually say, okay, enough's enough? And how does it play into that whole idea?
I mean, you know, I think in the UK, it's a little bit better, you know, definitely.
Do you think? Oh, yeah. And,
you know, definitely statistically, as far as obesity levels and, you know, but the States is even worse. But in both places, I don't think that the regular person really understands, you know, that the food industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and the fitness industry are all working together to keep you spending money and keep you going boom, bing, 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 back and forth. And they're ping-ponging you just as a consumer. You know, the fast food industry gets you obese with the food. Then you have to take the pharmaceuticals to get in shape. Then the doctor tells you, you got to go work out. And then you keep going back and forth because you're not really embracing the lifestyle. You're just trying to get a benefit, a short-term benefit. So if people understood that, they would actually be more motivated to train themselves and take responsibility of their bodies, because there's actually forces conspiring against you, marketing teams right now as you speak, sitting together looking at what color gets you to eat the most and makes you hungriest when the commercial is on. So wow. If you as a consumer, if you're not aware of that and it's not in your mind, or you're not embracing the pillars of wellness and embracing a wellness lifestyle holistically, as opposed to just trying to bend your lifestyle around getting in shape. Okay, I want to get in shape, so I'm going to do just enough for me to drop some weight, but I'm not going to change any of my lifestyle so it's sustainable. You have to take responsibility of that. You can't go back and blame the industry and go, oh, man, the industry. Because there's so many industries. Every industry is like that. How come the fitness industry is more responsible than any other industry? The plastic industry got BPA in the plastic. They're putting poison in the plastic. So when you eat it or microwave it or whatever, you're getting BPA. It's chemicals. The United States produces, 100% more corn than it actually uses. So there's high fructose corn syrup and everything. The agricultural, it's so systemic. You as a consumer, you have to be on it. Like then just to keep your immune system healthy, people don't want to vaccinate. They don't want to wear the mask at the same time. You better be keeping your immune system healthy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's really the one thing that you can control, is keeping your pre-existing conditions under control and having proper nutrition so your immune system's healthy. So you got to now, it's so many factors why right now, this next year coming in, you have to take, it has to be part of your business plan, part of your plan for wellness, so you can pass it on to future generations. Because it affects your success.
100%. I agree with you as well, because like you said, we have to take ourselves out of it as an individual, but at the same time, it's almost like a catch 22, right? The fragile mind, when it's not equipped with the right information, when it's not equipped with the proper information as well. And there's so much misinformation going on in every industry, I guess, as well. It's which one do you listen to? And like you said, like the advertising industry, the pharmaceutical company, they all work hand in hand together. And it's how we are being brainwashed. If people can understand, if you're being brainwashed every single day, and to have the knowledge and the power, and somebody needs to teach us this knowledge and power somewhere along the line. Like I remember the age of 30, until I slipped into depression and I realized, gosh, I have been killing myself to look good and to fit into this ideal standard of beauty in the UK by looking at these magazine covers, these celebrities. I was able to wake up. And I guess our job as well as fitness coaches is to give people the information that we have learned, to give them the tools and the resources so they can make up their mind who to listen to as well. Right. Well,
what's interesting about it, and I agree with definitely everything you said, is that this stuff is supposed to be taught in school.
It isn't, right?
In the beginning, you're supposed to be taught. So when we get in touch with an adult, and by the time we're personal training them, they have so many blockages.
Yeah.
It makes it very challenging. So, I mean, podcasts like this are great so you can bring the message, but people got to get over, number one, the financial block. Guys, you got to spend money. You have to spend money on your wellness. You have to have a monthly wellness budget. Everyone wants to talk about it. You can't get in shape for free. Mm-hmm. You know, one cup of spinach today.
Yes.
It takes 20 cups of spinach today to equal one cup of spinach from 1950 or 60. So you have to be eating organic, clean food. You have to be paying for supplementation to get those nutrients if you can't afford organic food. You have to put some thought into it. You know, yeah. You have to do what your trainer actually tells you to do. And that's a big block. And then another big blockage is that people have trouble investing in something that's not tangible. Like you said, they'll pay for the bag, but to invest in themselves, they're very hesitant to do. And we have to invest in ourselves. I mean, we've been trained not to, to put anything in self-care, but you got to have a self-care budget. What is your monthly wellness budget? Even if it's $10. If you got $10 a month and that's all you could do, then you know that's a guest pass at Planet Fitness. All right. Or that's one healthy shake. Again, at least I know what move I can make. But you have to, like any other business endeavor that you would approach to do, you would have a budget for it, how much you're working with, you would have your time allotted.
Yes, absolutely.
And you would write your goals down. But somehow there's a disconnect when it comes to health and wellness. People don't approach it the same way. And that's a big, you have to incorporate it into your life the exact same way you would incorporate anything else.
Yeah. Listen, I spent, I think, the best part of 8 years in my journey just putting value out why fitness is beneficial to us and why we should take it seriously. I was an amateur boxer in my early 20s. So I have that mindset of routine, discipline, and getting what I want. I have that fire. And females, or should I just say maybe sometimes fitness is not accessible to different genders or cultures and everything. And we have to look at those things seriously as well, of the narrative that we've been brought up in. Because when it's not encouraged to you as a child, it's not something that we take seriously as adults. Or it could be the other way around. You learn different things in the wrong way and you follow a magazine. Well, that's what I did as a magazine, at the back of the magazine, learning what diets to follow, which gets us into trouble. So to understand that there is an abundance of information out there with the good personal trainers that you can hire and make a priority is something that we really have to work more hard on to actually get people get off the couch. And more now than ever before with mental health being on the increase. You know, every week somebody is taking their life due to suicide, not even because they're ill, because they can't handle it anymore. And I always tell my clients, just look at the basic stuff, the fundamental stuff. Are you drinking enough water? Are you getting your food in? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you thinking happy thoughts? Are you feeling happy thoughts? And when the people don't understand the foundation, we all go through it as human beings, our extreme highs and our lows. And I guess one of the, assets that we have is the ability to change ourselves, because we know how it's like to be in a bad place and bring ourselves out of it, because fitness becomes one of the biggest ever tools that we can use to enhance our mental health, our self-love, our self-esteem, and our self-confidence as well.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. It's so essential. And if you embrace it, just like you said, in this totality, you know, all your pillars of wellness, and you look at why your physical wellness is a part of each other pillar of wellness. It's part of your spiritual wellness, because your spirit is in your vessel, your body. It's part of your mental wellness. Like you said, self-esteem is part of your financial wellness. It gives you that extra energy to take that extra class, to take that level up in life. That next step you want to do is part of your social wellness. You feel more comfortable when you're in shape, so you can blend in socially. So in every single facet, your physicality, your physical wellness has an impact in your totality. So you have to view everything holistically now. And it's interesting. There seems to be a divide in the, you got fitness and then you got wellness. You know what I'm saying? And it seems to be a divide. And a lot of times the fitness marketing seems to make people who are seeking wellness, it turns them off, because it's too much body, it's too much look at me, it's too much here are my muscles, or they perceive it as such. But, you know, I think, you know, people have to embrace the, of course, part of physical wellness is looking good. You know, you want to look good. You know, that's usually the first step into getting someone to embrace the lifestyle, because it's the most tangible step. So when the person is in the gym and I'm training them for a week or two and I'm getting them a physical result and they see the abs coming down, then I can say, okay, because the trust is established. Hey, man, are you meditating? Are you visualizing in the morning? It makes it easier to start to implement other things. But the physicality is really the gateway that's tangible for people to introduce them to the lifestyle. So I think the wellness people, they get it the wrong way. You know, they look at us like, oh, these guys are just superficially not teaching. You got the client for an hour. Usually less than three times a week. You know, I do three times a week mandatory with my clients, so I won't work with them at least three times a week. I prefer four, but three is good, because that's realistic for someone who's actually working a 9-to-5 or a parent or whatever. Three times a week, I want to get you in shape on a pattern that you can sustain. So I don't want to train you five times a week. My clients pay me for how little they train, not how much they train.
Yeah,
it's a recovery based system. But anyway, they take that type of stuff and then they can go on. Then it's feasible. Then you can implement it into your life. So I think that's the key, is just making it more of a lifestyle thing, not separating the fitness from the wellness. I see a big divide with that. You know, it kind of turns people off, or people say you're displaying your body. But even as a trainer posting on Instagram, you know, I get good feedback and I get negative feedback. Mark, you're always flexing. You're always showing your body. But, you know, if I work for an auto industry, and I was posting for Instagram, I'd be showing the car. It's the same thing, man. if I was a chef, I would be showing the food.
If you got it,
it's the same thing. I just happen to be a trainer, so I'm showing my body. That's what it is. But because people have so many issues tied up with their bodies, they turn it into a thing. But we just have to embrace the fact that, you know, we can enjoy our bodies. You know what I mean? It's okay to want to look good, you know, but let's take it further so we can make it sustainable. You know what I mean? Let's make it more of our ritual, part of our practice, part of our meditation, so we're getting benefits outside of the gym. And that's how you keep doing it long term, is you take the fitness lessons that you learn in the gym, that tenacity, and then you apply it to other facets of your life. So then that keeps you motivated to work out, because once you get in shape, if that was your goal, you lose motivation as soon as you're in shape. It has to be deeper. And it has to apply to everything else. Your fitness has to make you money so you can afford to be fit.
When I train some of the corporate clients and they are like six figures, millionaires, or whatever it is, CEOs of companies, it's literally teaching them, without your body, you're not making that money. You're not going to work.
You
work all day long, 50 hours in a week, but then your health deteriorates. Your mental health goes down. You're going to be affected in your relationships with your children.
Yeah, I've trained Fortune 500 CEOs. Clients die on me. You know, I've had clients die, you know, in my 30 years of training, who struggled all their life to get to this millionaire status, CEO, just had a baby. I mean, tragic stories, man, made it, but they sacrificed their health on the whole ride. And by the time they made it, you know, it's sad, guys. So, you know, you got to do both at the same time. You got to take care of your health and you have to sleep. Yeah. That model of grinding till you're, oh, you got to be up, grind, don't sleep, this, that, and the other. You got to get sleep because that's when your hormones replenish. That's when you get your creativity. You got to sleep. So that's when your immune system replenishes. That's the most important part of your recovery process is the sleep. So, guys, you know, take care of yourselves, man.
I always say your body is the only vehicle that you live in.
Yeah, you got to make it last.
And I have another saying is like your body is the first gym that you have access to that doesn't even cost any cash or a membership. When mm-hmm. you know how to use this vessel, that's when true freedom comes in. So you're not getting tied down to a dumbbell or anything. And, you know, when you look at what the body really craves, it's freedom. It hates being restricted. Like I don't ever put any of my clients on a meal plan because if the average mind can't even get themselves disciplined to actually train 3 times a week, I would not expect them to follow a plan, but word by word. And it's given them access to have this freedom to say, look, I've woken up today. I'm not feeling so good today. But what can I do if I can't hit the gym? Maybe I can do some stretching, breath work, meditation. These are all forms of looking after our spirituality and our mental health as well. And these are components that I think the fitness industry doesn't pay attention to, like breath work. And we get a hype and then it becomes a trend. Or meditation, it becomes a hype, then a trend. And everybody goes on this bandwagon. But it's not sustainable if you don't practice it every single day or parts of the day.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's why it's so important to rotate your clients and to allow them to continue their fitness journey, because there's a lot of skills. Just every trainer has skills, pros and cons, strengths and weaknesses. And by rotating the client, you make sure that they get the full fitness experience. As well as you as a trainer, you have to continue your own journey. So one thing I do like about training one-on-one, like you said, as opposed to working in the club, you can take this journey with the person. You can be like, okay, we're taking a meditation class together. Or we're taking a yoga class together, so you can, or we're subcontracting. I think one of your days of our training should be visualization, meditation, or boxing. So you get to have these experiences with the client as both of you being students, which bonds you even tighter so the client executes more. But, you know, for me, I'm totally on the opposite spectrum. And that's why it's good that there's different trainers. You know, like you would be the good cop trainer. I would be more like, listen, we got 30 days. I don't have time to go through your issues right now, your psychological shit, like, because usually it's something I have to get somebody ready for, a Chanel dress and Cannes Film Festival. You got 30 days. I never met the person. Go. Time to get a rapport in. Here's what we're going to do. A, B, C, and D. We're going to go intensive for this 30 days, and then I'm going to give you a whole different plan that's going to make it sustainable, but you got to get in your best shape for this 30 days. For this thing to work. And then we just rock and go hard, and I discipline them. I don't tell them what to eat, but I give them their numbers. This is the amount of macronutrients you're supposed to have each meal. Here's a food app. Here's another document, healthy food choices. Yeah. Here's another document, not so healthy food choices. You make your own decisions. I'm not here to babysit you because I'm not going to babysit you after these 30 days. So we're going to learn accountability, and then you're going to sustain this afterwards. And, if they don't adhere to it afterwards, at the very least, they hit me back. They go, Mark, I have a working knowledge of what works in my body and how to do it. So at least I empower them with the information. But because I introduce it to them in that fashion, I find most of them are able to retain their fitness because it's a high intensity, low frequency system. And they're not depriving themselves of what they have to eat. They're just making choices, size choices. So it's a little bit more sustainable. So I work the opposite way. I agree, the client's not ready. Just like you said, so it's not to give them a meal plan to easily go into it, but I throw them into it. I said, man, if you weren't ready for a new job, but it was a $50,000 promotion, you can take the job anyway, right? Come on, let's stop it now. It's your body. No. Bullshit out. You know, I just have to, once I get the focus and get the one-on-one, I said, come on, real talk, man. You can't suck it up for 30 days? Oh, yeah. For your life to pass on to your children so you can give this knowledge to your children so they can have health, wealth, and prosperity. Come on, man. Come on. Goodbye. So then, I'm more of a tough love.
Yeah. Well, this is exactly what I do with my girls. And I only train girls because I feel like I can relate to them a lot more for obvious reasons. And it's that kick up the soft kick up the backside. I need it too sometimes. You know, as humans, we all need people to check in on us while we check in on other people. And people have this perception that fitness coaches are 24/7 on the grind, on top of everything. We are not. We're humans. We have our down days. We have our high days. We have issues. We have real life problems as well. So it's so important for fitness coaches and trainers to show up in the authentic self. And this is another problem I have with a lot of coaches, because we're trying to replicate what the industry is doing, trying to be out there posing on the gram. We forget how to be us and how to relate to our real life clients at the same time and teach them, but not be, how do I say, spoon feed them at the same time. It's so important. There has to be a fine balance in everything in this industry.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think being in your authentic self is super important. And, you know, no, I wouldn't advise a trainer to approach a client like I do. Because a lot of that is based off of my personal experiences. You know, I started off with a 45-inch waist. Guess I got in fitness in the first place. So when I talked of running home from school with the man boot popping up and down, busting me in the chin. Man boots giving me black eyes, the whole shit. So,
oh, you're funny, man.
When I'm talking to a client, like, you know, I was the type of kid, I used to get my allowance and I go by Now Laters. You know Now Laters, the candy?
No.
Well, it's a hard candy. It's like a taffy, right?
Yeah.
And I used to take the different flavors and put it on the radiator, and I'd make Now Later sandwiches. I was a fat hood kid. Just loved to eat. Just loved to eat. But anyway, so when I talk to my clients, right, I'm not talking to them as somebody like, yo, you know, you need to do this and I'm superior. I'm talking to them like, listen, I used to do this shit too.
I've been there.
So I'm not talking to you like down to you. I'm saying, listen, you and I have been in the same place. I've had a 45-inch waist. I tell them the story. I show them my book. They're like, wow, Mark, really? I said, yeah, and you can do it, man. And we can have fun doing it. But you got to suck it up and you got to rock with me because I'm not going to play with you. You know, and then we can go journey together. But each trainer has to have a different approach that's authentic to them, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like this is the point. But going back to what we were speaking about at the beginning, in a fitness club, a commercial gym, I feel like a lot of good trainers lose their individuality, their personality, because they're trying to morph into what everybody else is doing.
They're all training the same too. They're all training the same.
Exactly. And, you know, in my experience working with real life clients with real life issues, it's what taught me to be a better human being, not even a coach, to be a better human being, to be compassionate, to be loving. And I think compassion is something I had to learn for myself, to be easy on myself, not to be too hard on myself. And having this compassion for clients, it makes them mellow down as well. And what was really fascinating once, I remember with a client, is when they look up to people that they admire, they see, I used to be an amateur boxer, I used to always talk about boxing, I was a hardcore boxer, is they put you on a pedestal. And in order for you to relate to people, you have to show them the real life issues that's gone behind. And it's a clever way of saying, look, fitness is the thing that's resurrected me. It's brought me back alive again. And if I can do it, so can you. And it's given people that permission, I guess, to actually take the journey with you and to trust you as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. I think that's one of my issues. In fact, I need to expose my vulnerability. That's interesting you say that. I've been told that. So, you know, I can't really too much. That is, in fact, a weakness of mine. So yeah, as you know that, I'm reinforcing it to myself. I need to. Yeah, that was a good one. So,
but it's hard for men, though. I feel like
it's tough for men. It's tough for guys. Yeah. So that's something I actually need to work on. So I ain't got too much comment on that. I got to work on that.
Working with a few male clients. A few male clients, understanding this part was like a penny drop moment. It's like we're all the same as human beings, but we're having different experiences, which make the human experience so fragile?
So I'm on the phone with this documentary company, right? They want to do a documentary on me, right? And we're talking, and they're like, yeah, you know, it's a conference call. I got my manager. It's like five people on the call. Everything's rolling. They talk about, yeah, yeah. I'm like, all right, cool, cool, you know? I'm like, yeah, Mark, what you want to do? I said, yeah, you know, I want to have a big charitable aspect. I'm, you know, I want to ride a motorcycle, you know, da-da-da-da. You're like, okay, Mark, well, what are you gonna expose? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I thought you were talking about my training, how I came out the projects and you spit this to a problem. I said, they said, yeah, Mark, but you know, what was your why? What do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
It was all, I think it was all women on the call other than me.
Wow.
And wow. They just started going in. They go, well, Mark, you need to talk about, you know, I know you talked to me about on the phone about your son being transgender and what you went through and your divorce in the last 2 years. I said, yeah, I wasn't ready for this type of emotional. What are you talking about? I wasn't ready. I thought we were talking about a documentary. Now we're getting to tearjerker and this, that, and the other. So something I have to work on, actually. But you have to do those type of things. I think it is important. It's important to get that part out of you. And I'm 51 and, you know, coming from Brooklyn and then going right to the military and being in war within a year and a half of being in the military. Yeah. And then coming out, all my formative years, I was taught compartmentalization. Mm. Not to talk any of that stuff. You know, so it's now that I got into my 40s and 50s, I'm better able to feel comfortable doing that, exposing yourself and being vulnerable. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it takes...
I work on it, and I have to remind myself all the time.
Yeah, and it takes time, even for females, I guess, because we've come to a place in society where everything's just glamorized. Like, I remember when I was an amateur boxer, it was just about being this Asian female in the boxing gym that was seen as wow. And that wow meant I never saw how people perceived me, because in my head, I'm still that fat child. I'm still that
right.
Body dysmorphia issue. So when I blossomed and I was getting all this attention, I didn't know how to handle it. But then it was having those deep inwards reflection in the gym sessions to understand that there are different parts to who Nazia is, and what part of me am I exposing, what parts of the vulnerability am I exposing. And the more I did that, Mark, like, you know, you do it without really knowing how the audience is going to perceive it, I realized it was helping people, and at the same time I was healing my own wounds at this weirdly enough.
Right.
And now in this stage of my life, I don't hold back talking about those vulnerable points, because everybody's going through it and everybody's looking for somebody to help them go through, you know, understand and heal themselves as well. And I keep talking about this thing about learn how to train, learn how to take control, learn how to exercise your mind, because if you don't exercise it, somebody else is going to do it for you. Somebody else is going to control those thoughts.
Yeah.
And that's when we become, that's when we go into this danger zone of losing ourselves and how to come back to ourselves again. It takes time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's an evolutionary process. I mean, sometimes you have to lose yourself to find yourself, you know? So
you
have to be aware that you're on a journey.
Yeah.
You know, and aware of where you're at, you know, on your journey. So then you can look back and say, okay, I think I was doing better when I was at this point, when I had implemented this, when I did that, and then look at it. But I think we also have to allow ourselves to change and not be so attached to what we were, because sometimes what we were it's not right for the situation that we're currently in. So I think sometimes you have to, you know, sometimes take two steps backwards to take five steps forward, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've been speaking for a long time. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What do you miss about your fat days?
Oh, man, you know what I miss? You know, I was a big dairy. I missed the dairy. I missed the dairy. And I'm allergic, too. So I used to eat it and get sick. You know, I just greedy fat kid allergic to maybe coughing and mucus coming out my nose, eating ice cream, peanut butter jelly sandwiches with a gallon of milk. I missed the dairy. Yeah, I missed the dairy.
Wow.
The creamy consistency is nothing like that fake cheese. It's nothing like it. The fake cheese today. I had some today, but it was like, you know, that plant-based cheese.
You Americans are bad, and we're getting worse here as well, right?
It's not the same, just not the same. But I miss the dairy, but I don't miss. But I always remember like being half comatose going to school, always having to go to sleep because the blood sugar with the sugar and then the dairy. That's what gave me the 45 inch waist and the big man boobs in the first place. So wow. I don't miss that part, but I do miss every birthday I have two apple pies with some ice cream in between and whipped cream, and I have apple pie sandwiches.
Oh, wow.
That's my treat. Yeah, I eat the whole thing, two apple pies for myself. So that's my dairy fix every May 2nd.
Oh, wow. Well, that's
and then I wake up in the morning in the fetal position, and I'm like, oh, I'm never going to do that again. Every year I do it. Every year. It's the worst.
We have somebody said government cheese. What?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember that, man. We used to have the brick, man. It comes in a brick like this.
Ah.
Well, cheese, government free cheese, man. When you're in the hood, that's what you lived off of. So that was, grilled cheese sandwiches. Yeah, that's real. I don't know who knew about that.
But wow. That's real. Well, listen, when I traveled to New York a couple of years ago in 2018, I mean, it was fascinating for me to go to America in the first place, but the portion sizes were ridiculous.
Huge.
I came back like and bloated. For like such a long time, and to get back on it again.
Yeah, and the drinks, crazy, man. People just eat here, you know, and then, you know, they have the holidays. Everything is centered around eating. There's no like physical activities. Everything is like eat before or eat after. Even church is eating. You know, everything is centered around that. And we gotta make activity and wellness the same way, you know?
Mm. You gotta on one hand, we have this huge increase of fitness trainers and the fitness industry. And simultaneously, we have a huge increase of mental health issues. Mental health issues, I feel like it does come from, I mean, yes, we have issues that we have to look at. People have traumas. But if people did look after themselves, that problem would be halved.
Well, a lot of these issues are coming from poor nutrition in adolescent years. A lot of these hormonal imbalances that lead to then mental You know, it's coming from poor nutrition, and there's studies to validate that. So, you know, nutrition is so essential and so important for the youth, for our children, to make sure your children are properly nourished, because it affects their hormone, affects their behavioral aspects. It affects their, on my podcast, I just interviewed this guy, and I volunteered for his organization maybe 10, 15 years ago. Mm. He's got a school in Harlem. He took an abandoned building and turned it into an organic garden. And he made the kids work in the garden and grow their own food. The kids ate the food. Their grades immediately went up because they were getting nutrients they never got before. They were in the hood in Harlem. Yeah. And, you know, he's still going today. 10 years later, I had the honor of actually interviewing him for the Anabolic Mind. And it'll go to show you how important the behavioral patterns got better immediately and the grades went up. As soon as they started getting green, organic nutrients, you know? So it's so important, and I definitely will cut probably even more than half. Yeah. You say half, that's being generous, probably even more so than half of nutrition.
Yeah. Like there is a difference between looking after your physical body now in today's society and also understanding what foods help your brain health. And we have to distinguish between those two as well sometimes for people to actually really take control, like saying, okay, this is not benefiting me to think and focus. If I had this instead, how is it going to enhance my performance? How is it going to enhance my energy? And these, I mean, we can speak about this all day long.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. It's fascinating.
What is the time then now? 7 o'clock maybe?
I don't know what time. 6:46.
So you've already trained?
No, I told you I woke up late.
Oh, you woke up late. So are you going to train now?
I threw on a tank. Yeah, I think I'm going to hit the gym right now.
Okay. So before I go, tell me what your morning routine is. What time do you wake up? What do you do in that first hour, the power hour? What are you doing?
I usually get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I look up and like, oh my God, I got to get up. I grab my phone. I go to my app Insight Timer. I did that this morning. I do a 6 minute meditation for power, focus or whatever. So before I get out of the bed, I get my mind right. I really shouldn't touch the phone, but I need the audio to take me in there. So
yeah.
I use the audio. I get the 6 minutes. I get my mind right. I hit the bathroom. I come out. I make some coffee immediately. Then I like plop down, stretch. My hips are very tight, so I can't do my meditation until I stretch, because then my hips don't open. So I gotta stretch first.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I'm gonna keep it 100 with you guys.
Yeah.
And then I do my meditation. If I have some clients, I usually have New York clients within an hour and a half of me getting up, and I'm in three different time zones doing virtual training. So I get up, bust the clients out. If I don't have clients, then I hit the gym. You know, and today I am doing legs. So I'm going to squat maybe. I'm going to try to get maybe 170 kilo. Try to get that for 6 to 8 reps on my max. And then I am boxing for an hour after that. But I'll be jumping rope for at least 30, 45 minutes during my boxing training. So I got like 2 hours to put in today. Then I'm going to stretch afterwards. Then I have admin, business, more clients.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to try to film some naked Instagram shots to get people upset.
Me.
and I'm intermittent fasting, so I'm not eating until midday for you guys, if you were curious.
You're hilarious.
But I am going to take some amino acids after this, so I tap into my fat stores and I don't eat my muscle up. So if that's what you guys look, that's my regimen right now.
All the cool people, right, message for the audience, all the cool people have a morning routine. I just asked Mark this to know if I can learn something new from his morning routine, but I'm doing all right so far.
Yours is probably more comprehensive than mine. Nothing startling there.
You know, just to summarize you, Joker, using fitness can actually elevate us in different areas of our life. It's not just about our reps that we're doing. It's not just about the sets. When we progress in our gym sessions, we're also progressing and elevating in different areas of our life. And what's there to say that you can't get what you want? You can. Make sure you're looking after your brain. Make sure you're looking after your body. Make sure you're loving yourself. And that's all the world needs is love. And that's it.
Yep.
Love and fitness.
That's it. That's a good way to end it out.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure actually connecting with you. And I look forward to seeing you when you come to the UK.
Yeah. Hope to see you next year. Thank you for having me.
Take care. See you soon.
Peace and love.
As brought to you by Winject Studios, we are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.